We are off and running in what was the and what is the most unique draft in NFL history. 32 picks are in the books. The first round is complete, and you're listening to the Move the Sticks recap podcast presented by FedEx. Glad to be here with you, Rhett Lewis, along with my guy, our former NFL scout, Bucky Brooks. We got a chance to watch DJ on the joint broadcast with NFL Network and ESPN. Thought for the challenges that everyone had with that broadcast and getting everyone's voices in and the technology that was used, thought they did a great job. DJ did a terrific job there with some of his analysis on those picks that we saw. Plenty of intrigue here, Bucky. Didn't start until we got really to the fourth pick, kind of went chalk with Burrow number one to the Bengals, Chase Young number two to the Redskins, and then Jeff Okuda number three to the Lions. And it was just, at that point, it had been kind of tame, right?
Yeah, it changed certainly when Andrew Thomas went to the Giants. But let's just talk about those first three. Like Joe Burrow, we expected that to happen. We thought that he would go number one, and he did. At number two, the expectation was Chase Young was going to be the cornerstone franchise player for Ron Rivera based on what we've seen with him and Julius Peppers, the way that he has a defensive background and the way that you can envision him building this team. That wasn't a surprise. I will say this. I am still a little bit surprised that the Detroit Lions took Jeff Okuda, not necessarily because Jeff Okuda's talents don't merit him being the number three overall pick. It's just that in essence, the Detroit Lions traded away Darius Slay for Jeff Okuda. And for a team that lives and dies playing man-to-man coverage, it just seems odd that they would entrust a lot of responsibility in a make-or-break year to a rookie cornerback. And I get it, and there's a belief, particularly from those people that come out of New England, if you check New England, get young cornerbacks, play man-to-man, do all the OTAs, the mini-camps or whatever for 4 or 5 years, and then never pay them because you've kind of run all the legs out of them. But, man, Darius Slay was playing at a high level for them, so it's a bit of a surprise that they moved on from him for basically Jeff Okuda.
Yeah, I think that's good analysis because we talked about that situation. Now they did go and sign Desmond Trufant in free agency, right? So they've got him to pair there as an experienced veteran with the rookie. But it kind of connects another pick much later in the first round. In fact, is the third pick that the Miami Dolphins made, making Noah Igbinoghene the third first round pick at number 30 overall, a corner to pair with a guy who they just paid in Byron Jones and a guy that they kept in Xavien Howard. So I think philosophically we see the emphasis of those with a Patriot background and roots in that system to have guys who they believe will be really good cornerbacks and to have a deep cornerback roster, Buck.
Yeah, I think it even goes deeper than that. I think when you look at the Dolphins pick, athletic playmaker, straight line speed, track and field background. Mom and dad were both well-renowned like athletes. And he is a guy that's very, very accomplished in high school as a track star, converted to DB after playing wide receiver early at Auburn. And what you see in his game is tremendous straight line speed, very explosive, has recoverability, not quite polished, as I would say, like a traditional corner in terms of being able to play off. But nose-to-nose, man-to-man, his speed is an asset. And if you think about who they brought over, Byron Jones. Well, Byron Jones is very, very similar when he came out of Connecticut. He was a guy that had explosive traits but was not necessarily a polished cover corner. So now in that secondary, your first three guys, Xavien Howard, Byron Jones, and then Noah, how you say it again?
Igbinoghene.
Igbinoghene gives them that. I don't believe he's necessarily a guy that can kick inside to the slot. I would think one of those other guys would do it. But certainly, if you're going to play that much man-to-man, you have to invest in the position. And that's what the Miami Dolphins have certainly done this offseason.
Yeah, no question. And obviously, we'll fill in the gaps here for you. We skipped from pick number 33 to number 30 here, but certainly a lot happened.
Yeah, that's fine.
A lot happened in between. There was a philosophical connection there, I thought, with Brian Flores' roots in New England as well, and that being their pick there at 30. So once we got Joe Burrow off the board, it kind of went former Buckeye to former Buckeye to former Buckeye there with the top three, considering Burrow's roots there in Ohio and at Ohio State before transferring to LSU. And then the quarterbacks we did see come off at 5 and 6, kind of as we had anticipated, although late in mock draft season, it certainly appeared that more people were expecting Justin Herbert to end up with the Dolphins and not Tua Tagovailoa. It ends up being switched. The Dolphins get Tua, and the LA Chargers get Justin Herbert from Oregon. So how do you like those fits for those two quarterbacks, Buck?
I like both fits, and I think both of them work really, really well. When you think about Tua Tagovailoa going to the Miami Dolphins, the reason why it works, I think Chan Gailey does a great job working with young quarterbacks. I think the system that Chan Gailey prefers to use, one that is really spread and open, very simple in terms of the verbiage, the concepts are very, very clean. I think it really gives a young quarterback an opportunity to have success. If you think about Ryan Fitzpatrick, first in Buffalo with Chan Gailey, and then coming down, he hasn't played for him in Miami yet, but Ryan Fitzpatrick was able to kind of spread and shred and have success. Tua Tagovailoa has explosive quickness and twitch as a thrower. I think it works really, really well, him being in Miami. For the Chargers, Justin Herbert is the perfect stretch bootleg quarterback to play in the system that Anthony Lynn wants to put in place in LA. He wants to run the old Shanahan system where they run the outside zone and counter it with the bootleg coming out the back door. Well, that's what Justin Herbert does. He does really well, throws off play action. If you saw him at the end of the year, his best games at the end of the year that we talk about, the Pac-12 championship game and the Rose Bowl, he utilized his legs and athleticism, followed it up with a solid performance at the Senior Bowl. I think it's easy to envision him playing in a system like that and having success, especially with the playmakers that they have on the outside. I like both fits for both young quarterbacks.
I think that that's a ton of great points. And, you know, I think it's going to be a lot of fun to watch those guys. They're both in situations where they won't be pressed into duty right away, as we mentioned with Fitzmagic there for the Dolphins and Tyrod Taylor for the LA Chargers. So we'll see if they get some time to kind of find their way, especially with whatever truncated offseason we're going to have this year due to the coronavirus pandemic. And of course, a big part of tonight's draft festivities was the draft-a-thon, and Rich Eisen hosted it, a terrific cause, supporting 6 charities, trying to get donations for everybody to help stop the spread of COVID-19 and help those that have been affected so greatly by the COVID-19 pandemic. So that's also a terrific piece of turning this draft into good. And it's already one of the most hopeful days of the NFL calendar, right? Everybody's team has a shot on draft day. And so it gives everybody hope. And most everybody leaves here pretty happy, I guess, unless you're maybe Aaron Rodgers. And oddly enough, that's not because he thinks he is in some sort of quarterback competition now that the Packers drafted Jordan Love, number 26, fourth quarterback off the board. Isn't it interesting that the quarterback with the most intrigue and the selection of a quarterback with the most intrigue is, in fact, the fourth one off the board, the last one to come off the board in the first round? We talked about it as a possibility, Bucky, with the Packers taking a quarterback they could groom under Aaron Rodgers at 30, they end up trading up to 26 with the Miami Dolphins to make that pick a reality, to make Jordan Love a Packer. So what do you make of the trade up to make sure they got him, and then the fit, and then we'll get into how Aaron Rodgers will react to all this?
A couple of things. Brian Gutekunst has talked about quarterback being a priority. I began to read about stuff in January about the quarterback that the Packers would take a serious interest in looking at the quarterback position. You want to make sure that you have a successor in place for Aaron Rodgers. And it's really smart to do it while Aaron is still available and playing, because what you don't want to do is Aaron to retire. Now you have to go into the offseason needing one. And if it just happens to be a year where there's not one, you reach and you don't get the guy that you want. Jordan Love was appealing to the Packers in my mind because he's talented, he has a big arm, he can make plays on the move, and if you squint, he does play the game in a style that is reminiscent of Aaron Rodgers. So much of the conversation and the similarities have been on Pat Mahomes, but who was Pat Mahomes compared to when he came out? Aaron Rodgers. And so For the Packers, they're getting a similar style quarterback that they can develop in a system that he will see one of the greatest play in. It makes too much sense for the Packers not to invest a top pick in a player that is a cousin, playing style wise, of the quarterback that they have in place.
Yeah, and now I thought it was interesting. David Bakhtiari was on the Draftathon with Rich Eisen and reacted to the pick of Jordan Love at 26 and said, "You are about to see Aaron Rodgers on fire." Not enraged with anger, but that he actually believes that whatever his reaction to this pick is will drive him to the very best of his game. Bakhtiari saying he's seen Aaron Rodgers upset and, let's say, frustrated, and how it ends up bringing the best out of him. Do you feel like that might be the case here? And how do you see the interaction between Rodgers and Love, Bucky?
Oh, I mean, I think the reaction is going to be a little frosty at first. I think for all of us, I mean, in any business, like when you put the young person behind us, you always look over your shoulder a little bit, and you do let some of your insecurities play out. I think some of that will come into play with Aaron Rodgers, because the difference with Jordan Love coming in is different when the young guy they bring in is a second or third rounder. When you bring in a first round pick, there are plans for the first rounder to be a significant contributor to the team. And when he plays quarterback, the clock starts as soon as he walks in the building. With the rookie contracts and 5 years and all of that other stuff, at some point, Aaron Rodgers has to know they're going to hand the ball to Jordan Love. And so how comfortable are you in your own skin to share information to the guy that you know is going to take your job? It takes a real man to be able to do that kind of stuff. You have to be a real one to really be able to deal with that and continue to play at a high level while also helping the guy behind you learn how to play at that same level.
But now the relationship between Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers was a little frosty at the beginning too, right? I mean, this is not something that Rodgers will be unfamiliar with. I wonder if that changes the way he approaches this interaction and this relationship with Jordan Love, knowing how it was like for him in that situation at the beginning of his career. So the other thing is, like, we had talked about Brandon Ayuk perhaps being a nice fit for the Packers, who could use some wide receiver help outside of Davante Adams, right? And he ends up being the pick that the 49ers end up taking. I think they ended up going one spot ahead at number 25, trading with the Vikings. So you know, maybe that was something that the Packers were considering, but I guess the idea of not continuing to surround Rodgers with talent. And again, we haven't seen the whole plan unfold yet. This is just night one, pick one. So that's just something to think about as the Packers get on the clock here in the second and the third round tomorrow. Are they going to do something then to try to make the most of Aaron Rodgers' final few years here with the Packers?
The thing that I would say, like, having been around that organization, having played there, having seen the developmental plan when it comes to wide receivers, they typically don't take first-round receivers. Like, typically, yeah, the sweet spot for the Packers has been to find their receivers in the second round or the third round. I mean, if you go all the way back, I mean, way, way back, Antonio Freeman, Robert Brooks, Greg Jennings.
Yeah. You go, great point. Like, Jordy Nelson.
They've always been able to find those guys on day two. Davante Adams was a second-round pick. And so, to me, I felt like the second round or the third round, day two, was going to be the sweet spot for them to find some wideouts. And because this class was, in my mind, was loaded with playmakers, I just believe that they certainly can find a playmaker to surround Aaron Rodgers with. And
yeah, I'm with you on that. I'm with you on that as well. So a good night for Jordan Love is the fourth quarterback off the board, and especially good night if you were an offensive lineman, particularly a tackle, if you were a wide receiver in this draft, and if you were a cornerback. And I think that's probably related a little bit, because those were the positions where we saw the most players off the board, six apiece. seven, I guess, if you include the offensive lineman and in the interior as well, and Cesar Ruiz, who kind of surprisingly went off the board at number 24 to the New Orleans Saints. But let's just start there as we get to kind of the other notable storylines from the night. And it really, to me, it starts with those positions with those three. As we talked about on the last preview podcast we had here, those are going to be the positions of depth where we see the most players picked. And that ended up bearing true.
Yeah, so it's all about the transformation of the National Football League into a passing league. The first round is the round where you really go after what we call those foundational pieces, those pieces that are essential to building a championship program. Well, in the past, we had always talked about quarterback, pass rusher, cornerback, and then offensive tackle, and those are true, but increasingly, the wide receiver position has gained prominence in terms of how people view it in the team building process. And so to see six wide receivers and then to see six cornerbacks, well, people are known, if they get these explosive wide receivers, we got to have guys that can cover them. And because so many of the corners in this class were over 6 foot, it was very appealing and attractive and the like. And then with the offensive tackles, if we're going to put the ball up, we need to make sure that we protect the quarterback. That's why you're seeing it. I think it's fascinating, and I think it'll be interesting to see how it continues to evolve and play out when we get to day two.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Let's get to some of our favorite picks of round one. What stands out to you here in this category, Buck? Your favorite pick from the first round?
Man, favorite pick. There's so many to choose from, like with all the wide receivers that are there. I mentioned Justin Jefferson going to the Minnesota Vikings because he's a Stephon Diggs clone, but I'm going to go a little before that. Let's go with Jerry Jeudy going to the Denver Broncos. And the reason I'm going to point out Jerry Jeudy going to the Broncos is not because I think it's a great situation with him playing opposite Cortland Sutton. It's Pat Shurmur, as a play caller, was at his best in Minnesota when he had Adam Thielen and Stephon Diggs. Jerry Jeudy is a route runner in that same class. Polished, precise, does a great job of getting open. When Pat Shurmur is putting in this system, he is going to create some opportunities for Jerry Jeudy to be a dynamic playmaker. I love the fit. I think Jerry Jeudy eventually becomes the number one receiver, with Cortland Sutton being the number two at some time.
Yeah, and you talked about Justin Jefferson. I thought that was a home run pick there for the Vikings at 22, and it just so happens to be the pick that they got in the Stephon Diggs trade. So you get some salary cap value there, and a guy who was a ultra productive wide receiver at LSU this last year, and a really good player. So to pair there with Adam Thielen, I've struggled with this. My favorite pick in this draft, I really think that it ends up being a guy like CeeDee Lamb, who kind of fell down the board just a little bit, thought he might be the first receiver off the board, ends up being the third wideout taken, and it's the Cowboys who have an elite playmaker with elite run after the catch skills fall right into their lap there at 17. And that was kind of a really hard selection for me to make when I was mocking the draft. What are the Cowboys going to do? The receivers are gone. The edge rushers are gone. The top two corners are gone. But here they come with CeeDee Lamb falling right into their laps at 17. And credit to the Cowboys, who I assume trusted their board here and took what was the best player available. And they got a heck of a playmaker to team up there with not only Amari Cooper, but with Michael Gallup, with Ezekiel Elliott there. That is, I mean, what a fantastic trio of wide receivers they're going to be able to trot out there, Buck.
Yeah, they're going to have a lot of fun. Mike McCarthy's going to have a lot of fun with these guys. And Rhett, I've been calling CeeDee Lamb DeAndre Hopkins plus throughout the run-up. But then when I go back and I look at this and I think about Mike McCarthy's influence, I think he does have some Devontae Adams in his game, maybe even a little more explosive. And when you play in Mike McCarthy's offense, an offense that's really built on quick rhythm passes, plays that are designed to get the ball in the hands of the wide receiver quickly and let them feed off a run after catch, a guy like CeeDee Lamb is going to absolutely crush it in that. And with the attention being placed on Amari Cooper as the number one and Michael Gallup emerging as a solid number two, CeeDee Lamb just kind of slotting in there as the number three or the slot receiver or whatever you want to call him, I think is going to work well. And as you're building this offense to really enhance what Dak Prescott does, I just like surrounding them with playmakers that can do a variety of different things. I like what Dallas is doing in really building up this offense.
Well, let's bring the third member of our crew in here. Daniel Jeremiah was on the broadcast tonight of night one of the draft on the joint broadcast between ESPN and NFL Network. Has his favorite pick of round one. Let's get to that right now. Nabil, roll that tape.
This is outstanding by John Lynch. You trade DeForest Buckner, you get the 13th pick. You trade back to 14, get an extra pick, and you replace DeForest Buckner at the same position with a younger, cheaper player. John Lynch putting that Stanford education to good use.
So DJ there complimenting General Manager John Lynch, who's no stranger to moving up and down the draft board here, did it again at the back end of the first round, coming up to get the receiver that they wanted in Brandon Ayuk, which is a little interesting. But back to this Javon Kinlaw pick here. We kind of thought this might be the pick at 13. They end up moving back one spot, getting an extra, I believe it was a third round pick, to go ahead and make this deal with the Tampa Bay Bucks and still get the guy that they probably wanted at 13 in Javon Kinlaw, who, again, just feels like a replacement for DeForest Buckner, who they sent to the Colts and then got this very pick in return. So, I love the idea of continuing to fortify a position that's already a strength on your team, Buck.
Yeah, build strength on strength. The San Francisco 49ers really did a great job of being able to ship off DeForest Buckner before they really had to give him big, big bucks. And then they get a replacement for him that is very, very similar in terms of playing style, length, the position that he plays, and everything. That's uncommon for the board to fall like that, where it really works out for them, but it did. So kudos to them. And then for them to go back, and we've talked about Brandon Ayuk coming. I think the one thing that played out in the draft in the first round, man, if you just sit and take the best player available, you're going to have an opportunity to get really good players. And even though it may put you in a position where you have a surplus, i.e. the Dallas Cowboys, who didn't really need a wide receiver, but they took one. The San Francisco 49ers, who already had four first-round picks on their D-line, but they take another one. I just think it works. I think just basically like the basic premise of, I'm going to rank these guys according to their talent, and if one of those guys is sitting there when it's time for us to pick, we're going to take them. I think it works. And because of the conservative nature of how people had to approach it, I think there were more teams that were willing to stick to the BPA.
BPA, premise.
Best player available.
I mean, I prefer the PBU, the primary backup, but yeah, BPA, BPA works too, my man. So those are a look at some of our favorite picks of round one, and we could have gone on and on. I thought Ke'Lavon Chaisson was a really good pick by the Jaguars at number 20. Coupled with what ended up being a really nice first round with C.J. Henderson at number 9. I mean, if it was best player available, great, because it certainly aligned with need for the Jaguars. They needed a corner after trading away everybody at the cornerback spot, and the same thing with the edge rusher, depending on what happens with Yannick Ngakoue. Now, it happens every year, right? We get some surprising picks, whether it be where someone was taken, the team that took them, or just the player in general sneaking into the first round after being talked about more as a day two player. Bucky, your most surprising pick in round one, how does that sit for you?
Okay, I'm going to say I like the pick, but I'm going to still say it's one of the more surprising ones of the draft. And I'm going to say Damon Arnette going to the Las Vegas Raiders. The reason it's a surprise is because he really wasn't on the grid. When you look at the top five list, or you look at the top 50, he's like, he didn't necessarily make an appearance. But here's why I like it, because I'm going back and I'm looking at my notes. And in my notes, what I wrote down was four-year player, very experienced, great eyes, great discipline and coverage, a guy who is a versatile technician, meaning he can play up, he can play off, he can bail, he can play man or zone, all those things. So, Rip, when you listen to that report is a fairly glowing assessment. In my notes, I wrote down, I gave him a mid to top of the second round grade, but I put a plus by it, meaning that I could see him going up. And when I took these notes, these notes are from prior to the combine. And I think for Arnette, he's just a solid player. And I think the one thing that Mike Mayock and John Gruden have done of late, they've really tried to get like these blue chip players that are just solid all the way around. Football is first, football is a priority. And they've got them from big schools where you've seen them
championship programs. Yep.
Championship programs. And so as you're trying to change the culture, I think it's very, very important that you get guys that understand how to win at the highest level. And they have taken prospects that played at the highest level in the collegiate game.
Yeah, we saw it last year with Cleveland Furl at number four. And then, of course, going
just on and on. I mean, Josh Jacobs and Jonathan
Trayvon Mullen. Yep.
Trayvon Mullen. Yeah, they invested in guys that kind of played at big programs and had a lot of success. And it has helped them kind of turn the corner.
Yeah, so they ended up going there with, as you said, Damon Arnett. His buddy Jeff Okuda ends up going, I think, 16 spots ahead of him there at number three overall to the Detroit Lions. Surprising pick for me, and I guess I can relate it back to the 49ers taking Javon Kinlaw at 14, but the Saints taking Cesar Ruiz at 24. Now, you could consider the offensive line for the Saints already a position of strength. You got a guy that they drafted in the second round last year in Eric McCoy, who graded out among the best rookie offensive linemen in the league last year. You've got two very well compensated guards already in Larry Warford and Andres Pete, who they just extended, and then two really good tackles in Ryan Ramczyk and Teron Armstead. And I'm just wondering, is there any room at the inn for Cesar Ruiz, the interior offensive lineman from Michigan? So, but that goes back to what I was saying about the 49ers taking Kinlaw. Go ahead and continue to fortify a position of strength. And if we go back and we look at years past with New Orleans and we look at their philosophy in trying to protect Drew Brees, they have always made commitments on the interior offensive line. You go back to Jari Evans, who ended up being a Pro Bowl guard. You go back to Carl Nix, who was a Pro Bowl guard, and they ended up paying those guys a ton of money. And then Jonathan Goodwin was a really good player at center for them for a long time. And then they traded for Max Unger, and they made him a centerpiece of their offense along that offensive line. The philosophy has always been there to try and have really good players. Ben Grubbs coming in from the Eagles at one point, right, to help out there at guard for the Saints. So they have always placed an emphasis on getting those players on the interior of the offensive line, both at center and at guard. And so I guess to me then that makes sense with the pick of Ruiz. The surprising part of it is we kind of thought of him more, Bucky, as a day two pick, right?
Yeah. And so like here's the thing, right? When we get into the bottom of the first round, I'll say this, like guys rank from 20 to 40, they can find themselves in or out of the first round just based on need, based on style and how it fits within the scheme. Ruiz was a bit of a surprise. We heard the buzz about him being a first round pick, but when I looked at the tape, he didn't strike me as necessarily an elite player. I thought he was good. I thought he did a great job in terms of identifying, making calls. He was a solid position blocker in the running game and solid in the pass protection, but I didn't get necessarily a standout or premier player. But, you know, in this league, we're seeing beauty is in the eye of the beholder. And Sean Payton obviously saw something in Ruiz that led him to believe that he would be a starter early. Because when you take a guy in the first round, you expect him to start and be a key contributor right out the gate. And so somehow as they reshuffle that line, I would have to think that he gets in there.
So he could easily come in as a sixth offensive lineman if need be, although not at the tackle spot. That's often where we see, like, if you're going to use six offensive linemen at once, that wasn't necessarily what I'm saying. But saying to come in both at the center position and the guard position, would you view Ruiz or McCoy as more likely to play guard in the NFL? Any idea there?
Ooh. You know, like normally when you're evaluating those guys, typically they've had to practice at all three spots,
yeah, right? Been cross trained, right?
In the center,
yeah.
They've been cross trained, and so I think what you do, because man, McCoy was a young player, had some success. I think you kind of put the onus early on Ruiz to see if he can play guard, and then you just kind of reshuffle the deck. Normally, in these situations, you'll have those guys alternate or play different spots, and just kind of see what is the best combination of five that we can put on the field. And then let's try and put them in the right spot so they can be effective. And so we'll see how this plays out.
Yeah. And again, let's see. Larry Warford on the hook, cap hit. just under $13 million this year, but only $5 million in dead cap. So,
There you go. You already made it. You're the GM. You made it. You already made the pick.
Did I make the call? I don't know.
You already made the pick.
So now
Larry Warford is listening to the podcast. He's distraught because you've already told him that, hey, Larry, I'm just letting you know June 1st, you're probably going to get the phone call.
But this is the last year of his deal. He's an unrestricted free agent next year. So they could just be continuing to think in the future there with Ruiz.
True, and again,
the record, I loved Larry Warford. He was an original pick of the Detroit Lions when my dad was there as the trainer. In a year, they ended up starting Larry Warford as a rookie. I believe he ended up being on the all-rookie team. And Adrian Waddle as a free agent that year at right tackle. Being a really, really good draft there for Martin Mayhew with the Detroit Lions. Anyway, I digress. So that was my thought on a surprising pick. Let's get DJ's thoughts on one of his surprising picks of the night from the broadcast that we saw on ESPN and NFL Network.
Yeah, Trey, starting 41 games in the SEC. He's played left tackle. He's played right tackle. You know, everybody had these tackles in a different order. For me, he was my fourth offensive tackle, but I do feel like he has a very high floor. You know exactly what you're getting with him. He's going to be able to uproot people in the run game, and he's going to have a firm anchor in pass protection to hold up there. I did not see elite recoverability, elite quickness, or elite athleticism. I think that they've got themselves a solid, steady player, but I thought there were better options on the board at the position at this point in time if they were going to go tackle.
Yeah, I thought that was really interesting as well. DJ brought up the fact that Andrew Thomas ends up being the first tackle off the board. Certainly no surprise, Bucky, that the Giants ended up taking a tackle. A bit of a surprise that it was Thomas, oftentimes mocked as the fourth tackle off the board as we were leading up to this draft. Why do you think Thomas was the fit there for the Giants? And were you surprised by that at all?
I can't say that I was necessarily surprised. I think if you go back and you look at Dave Gettleman's history, he typically kind of puts it right in the middle of the fairway. Like he just kind of wants a bit of a safe pick. And Andrew Thomas, to me, was safe because you watched him play 41 games. He had 41 starts in three seasons. You know exactly what you're getting. Like he can move people off the ball in the running game. He's solid as a pass protector. And for the Giants couldn't afford to have a blatant whiff. And even though some of the other guys had more upside and potential, I think David Gettleman took comfort in just knowing, hey, I'm just going to take solid. If we get a solid player, we will be fine. And I think that's why he went in that direction.
Let me ask you this real quick as a follow-up, because we saw it a little bit with the Cleveland Browns, but on the opposite side, the Browns ended up taking Jedrick Wills, an absolute right tackle in this draft, right? That's all he played at Alabama. And they had just spent big money on a right tackle in Jack Conklin. So got to assume they see the rookie as a potential switch over to left. I'm wondering if that's also what they're seeing here, at least early on in New York, knowing that they have Nate Solder, even though he hasn't quite performed to the level that they probably expected when they signed him to that big money deal a couple of years ago. And then you take a guy who's played left tackle at least the last couple of years, but did start his Georgia career, right, Bucky, at right tackle? Do you see Andrew Thomas starting at right tackle as a rookie and then maybe eventually taking over for Solder at left?
Yeah, no, I can see him playing right tackle. He has that in his game. He certainly has been comfortable on that side. And if you can, you try and get the young guy to move more so than the older guy. And so Andrew Thomas, I can see starting his career playing right tackle. And then you figured out, to go back to Jedrick Wills, because you mentioned this about Jedrick playing right tackle. Just remember, Tua Tagovailoa was a left-handed quarterback.
Blindsided protector.
He actually played on his blind side. And so sometimes it can be weird for guys to switch their stance and go to the left side. I think he's athletic enough to do it. I think he could feel that role as a left tackle if need be.
I think you're right. And by the way, I'm just getting some reaction from some of my buddies who cover the Saints, and the headline of one of their articles here on The Athletic: the Saints did not draft Cesar Ruiz to be a backup. Interesting thought there. So they're going to figure out a place for him to end up the starting five. At least that's what the thought process is down in New Orleans right now. Anyway, so Okay, so we've hit the offensive linemen. We've covered most of the storylines that we saw on night one. Certainly was interesting to see Clyde Edwards-Helaire go number 32 overall to end up the draft. No DeAndre Swift in the first round, which means he's available as we enter day two. Give me an idea of what you think the Bengals are thinking, whether they're going to sit and pick. That's always a popular trade destination, right? Overnight, as teams try to say, I got to get my guy that's available now. How do I get that pick from the Bengals? Give me a pick for the Bengals there, and then maybe a couple of guys that you see as your best available here heading into day two.
Well, obviously, we'll start with the Bengals. With the Bengals, I think it'd be an offensive tackle. And so there are two guys that are top of the board that could be available. Ezra Cleveland from Boise State has certainly gotten interest in games steamed of late. And then Joshua Jones from Houston is also available. I think either one of those guys would fit. They have a bit of a need at offensive tackle. They have Bobby Hart that is playing on the right side, but certainly they could look to upgrade that. They have Jonah Williams coming back off an injury. He missed all of his rookie season. So maybe they go that route. A couple other guys to think about. DeAndre Swift obviously is a big name. J.K. Dobbins, the running backs. We should see plenty of running backs fly off the board in the second and third rounds. Xavier McKinney, Grant Delpit, two safeties that were well regarded, didn't go in the first round. I think they could go. And then Jalen Johnson, the corner from Utah that we thought might sneak
into the
first round. A little bit of a surprise that he didn't necessarily make it all the way in there. But there are a ton of, like, where are we at right now, the second round? Plenty of really good players that you can get that can come in and fit. And for wide receivers, pay close attention to the wide receivers that are selected in this round coming up in the second round, because the last couple of years we've seen the second round wide receivers have emerged and popped as stars down the line.
T. Higgins, Denzel Mims, LaVisca Chenault, among those we expect to come off the board very quickly in the second round here. And I think you're right on those tackles coming off for the Bengals. That would certainly make some sense there. It was a bit of a surprise to not see Jalen Johnson and to not see Trayvon Diggs when we had six cornerbacks in the first round. Also a bit of a surprise to not see that second tier of the edge rushers really develop with Yetur Gross-Matos.
Yes.
Yeah, and AJ Epenesa, if you believe he was in that group as well. So those are some of the names that we can expect to see in day two, second round and third round, starting with the Bengals at pick number 33. And once those picks are all wrapped up, we will be right back here with you on the Move the Sticks podcast to recap those day two picks and get you set for day three as well. Been some fun here for Bucky Brooks. I'm Rhett Lewis. Thanks so much for hanging out with us here on Move the Sticks, presented by FedEx.